Welcome to True Crime South Africa. I'm Nicole Engelbrecht, and you're listening to the first special episode, The Sex Offenders Register. This episode is sponsored by the upcoming release movie, Sleeping Dogs. Crime film fans, listen up. This one has got every element of crime you could ask for playing out on screen. Ex-murder detective Roy Freeman has a problem. A man is on death row for a murder he claims he didn't commit, and the secrets to solving the murder and saving the man's life seem to be locked away in Roy's head. Roy, played by Russell Crowe, has been working on healing his fractured memory, and now it's not just his own life that hangs in the balance. As he is forced to return to a murder investigation he doesn't remember, Roy finds that a sinister web of buried secrets and betrayals might just link the case to his own murky past. And the closer he gets to the truth, the more he starts to believe it might just be safer to let sleeping dogs lie. Starring Russell Crowe and Karen Gillan, and directed by Adam Cooper, Sleeping Dogs hits the big screens in South Africa on the 19th of April, and you know I've got tickets for you. As soon as you're done listening to this episode, head over to TCSA's socials and enter the giveaway to win two sets of double tickets to watch Sleeping Dogs, as well as double refreshment tickets for your popcorn and drink. The trailer to this movie looks epic, so get over there and enter right now. A huge thank you to Sleeping Dogs for sponsoring this episode of True Crime South Africa. Since 2019, True Crime South Africa has been telling the stories of the victims of violent crime in South Africa. The podcast is independent. That means no big or even little corporates fund it. And that's just the way I like it. And it's the only independent podcast in South Africa that consistently charts in the top 10. Keeping a podcast like this going is time-consuming, and for the most part, it remains a one-woman process. It's me. I'm the one woman. You, yes you, are the reason this podcast continues to flourish and help bring in tips on missing person and cold cases. If you'd like to help keep the show running, please consider supporting our sponsors, signing up to Patreon or PayPal, follow the show on the socials, as the kids say, and share it with your fellow partners in crime. You can find our social links and learn more about our sponsors at truecrimesouthafrica.com/donate. Shout out to this week's Patreon and PayPal superstars. A huge thank you goes out to ET007, Janita, and Ruth for your support on Patreon. Please remember that if you're waiting for a shout-out as a new Patreon member and you haven't heard it within a week or two of joining, reach out to me on Patreon and let me know, as the platform is not particularly good at letting me know about each and every new member. Thank you so much, everyone. Patreon supporters get one additional exclusive episode a month, a shout-out on the pod, and other exclusive content, including Q&As with me, as and when it's available. It's a minimum of $1 a month. I think you should do it. Please. And thank you. Kia ba. In this episode, I'm trying something new. I like to use this platform for education, for you and for me, because I learn along with you as I research. Often that sharing of important information happens almost unintentionally as I explain aspects of the law in case episodes or discuss topics with interviewees. But there are many topics that are important for us to understand but wouldn't necessarily always fit into one of these types of episodes. So occasionally, I'll be doing one of these special episodes in which I focus in on one specific area of true crime. Today, it's the Sex Offenders Register, or as it's called in South Africa, the National Register for Sex Offenders, or NRSO. So let's get into your first TCSA special episode, the Sex Offenders Register.
The following episode may contain sensitive material, including descriptions of violence, sexual assault, or graphic descriptions of injuries to victims. If you feel you may be triggered by such material, please consider this before accessing our content. To access trauma counseling or services, please see the helpline information on our show notes.
A sex offenders register is something we often hear mentioned in true crime content related to the United States. And it's probably not something we think of in a South African context very often. Occasionally, in a judgment delivered at the end of a trial, we'll hear a judge mention that an offender who's been convicted of certain sex offences will have their name placed on such a register as part of their conviction. But where is this register, and who can access it? South Africa's National Register for Sex Offenders came into being in 2007 through an amendment to the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters, Amendment Act No. 32 of 2007. The register is administrated by the Department of Justice to ensure that the moment an accused is found guilty of a sex crime against a child or a person with a disability or other vulnerability in a court of law in South Africa, that offender's name is recorded in a register. If an appeal is successful and the offender is found not guilty of the charges, then their name must be removed. Post-2007, the initial legislation written around the register was found wanting. So in 2022, an additional amendment was put in place which governed the regulation of the inclusion of names on the register and who should be able to access the register. The amendments also broadened the definition of the victims who were considered vulnerable under the Act, from only disabled persons and children to also include females of 25 and under who are in a tertiary study situation or living in a residence related to tertiary study. Also, people, male or female, living in residences where victims of crime are cared for, or a person, male or female, over 60 years old who is being cared for in a facility or receiving community welfare assistance in some way. Now, the fact that this does cover all children, regardless of gender, is great. But once you turn 18, male victims of rape just seem to be forgotten. And I have to wonder whether that leaves a gap open for sexual predators targeting male victims in places of tertiary education. I don't really understand the reasoning behind this. Despite being created in 2007, the register actually only started having names entered into it in 2009. Between then and 2019, according to available numbers, 32,000 sex offenders were entered into the register. An additional 4,000 names were waiting to be captured after the conclusion of their court proceedings. Now, the whole point of this register is to help enforce the ruling that individuals found guilty of sex offences covered by the register's legislation are not allowed to work or live in institutions or organisations where they'll be in contact with people considered vulnerable according to the Act. So, put simply, if a teacher is found guilty of sex crimes against his or her students or other children, who are, of course, the most vulnerable, that person cannot ever again work in an environment like a school. Makes sense, right? Right. But despite this register having existed since 2007 and having names entered into it since 2009, the first time it was used for verification by an external organization was 2019. So that gave sex offenders more than 10 years, if they were released on parole or didn't have a prison sentence, to re-enter schools or similar and re-offend. And organizations like schools don't actually have physical access to the register themselves. It's not like a principal of a school can go online, log in, and search a name. Instead, they apply to the department administrating the register with the person's name, and the department will search the register for them and either give them a certificate saying they're all clear, or a report about the offences the person was convicted of will be supplied. It remains the school or other employer's responsibility to check the register on hiring, and also to ensure that, should they discover they have a registered sex offender on staff, that person's employment is terminated. Now, although I'm sure schools, etc., would prefer an easier process, I can sort of understand why they've done it this way, because it helps to protect the privacy of other people who may not be prospective employees of the school. But that further raises the question, is it really just something that should be accessible around employment opportunities? Is it not just as important for someone to know that they have a sex offender living next door to them? And on the other hand, is that not discriminatory to the sex offender? And should that even matter? Surely a child's right not to be sexually assaulted should far supersede the offender's right to privacy. That is the big question. The law does allow for any individual who would like to check the status of a person who is going to be caring for vulnerable people in their care to be checked. This means that a mother who has a new boyfriend who may care for her children at some point can have him checked on the register, but not without his knowledge and written consent. In this case, essentially the individual would have to give written consent for the register to be searched for his own name. In the USA, all 50 states make registry information available to the public. The manner in which communities are informed about sex offenders and the types of sex offenders requiring notification vary from state to state. For example, communities could be notified through an email, flyers, or community meetings, or in person or through written requests. When activists have raised the question of why the South African public cannot have access to our sex offender register in the same way, the violation of privacy and constitutional rights of the offender has always been the proffered answer. I'd also love to know from anyone involved in the education system, exactly how easy is it to get a response from this register? Is the application process smooth? How long does it take? Because if all of this responsibility remains in the hands of schools and similar institutions, there's room for human error. And if the system doesn't work particularly well, perhaps there are situations where individuals are slipping through the cracks because schools need to urgently fill positions. So maybe they hire someone and only get their results back from the register 2 or 3 months after they've applied. How many children could have been harmed in that period? Or maybe I'm totally wrong and the register works almost instantly and schools have no issue getting their applications back. Of course, it is the ultimate responsibility of the offender to ensure that firstly, they do not apply for jobs or other caregiving roles that may put them in contravention. But if for some reason they do, they must advise the organisation in question. Failing to do so is a criminal offence. The main objective of a sex offender register, both in South Africa and most other countries in the world, is to prevent sex crimes. It operates off the understanding that sex offenders are, in general, one of the more difficult types of offenders to rehabilitate, and the recidivism rates in sex offenders is relatively high. The advantages of having such a register are clear when used appropriately and correctly. The disadvantages to the register are really mostly from the offender's side in terms of their privacy and human rights. For any offender re-entry into society is difficult, and having a criminal record of any kind makes finding work and sometimes even accommodation complicated. Obstacles to re-entry are one of the myriad of reasons that many offenders in general return to a life of crime. This is why it's vital, as part of the parole process, to ensure that an offender has a plan in terms of where they will live and how they will acquire work, and also a reason that skills training is available to offenders during their incarceration to increase their chances of being hired despite their criminal record. When the offender has committed sex crimes and their name is entered onto a register, some argue this process is made more difficult. This argument is not really valid in South Africa at the moment, though, because access to the register is only used to prohibit sex offenders from engaging in behaviour they are already prohibited from doing by law anyway. In other words, working with vulnerable persons, including children. So that doesn't really add to their challenges, because it would only impact them in the same way that someone who had been incarcerated for financial crimes, for instance, would find it difficult to find work in the financial sector after parole, because that sector usually does criminal background checks before employing. In countries where the sex offenders register is open to the public, the difficulties for offenders become far more prevalent. In some states in America, anyone can search anyone's name on the register and find a sex crime they may have committed. This could result in discrimination, social isolation, difficulty finding housing and employment. I can see how this would be difficult and concerning for paroled offenders. But again, the question for me remains, how do you weigh this up against the rights of a child or other vulnerable person to not have to live with the trauma of sexual abuse for the rest of their lives? Some might say that it is unfair to expect that a sex offender will reoffend. And in some ways, that's fair. But the data does show that not all sex offences are equal in terms of the rates of recidivism we see. Paedophilic sex offenders do have high rates of recidivism. Some other categories, not so much. Which is possibly another reason qualification to be placed on our sex offenders register here in South Africa has been structured the way it has. It makes sense to a certain extent. In South Africa, another layer of complication has been added in regard to the register when in 2021 the Protection of Personal Information Act came into being. Since its inception, by all accounts, there's been little to no discussion about how the POPI Act actually impacts the access to sex offender information on the register. I've spoken at length about paedophilia in specific cases before. And yes, the general consensus among the psychiatric community is that it is a disorder that a person will live with for the rest of their lives. Similar in ways to a personality disorder, it's something that a self-aware patient who wishes to engage in therapy around can learn coping mechanisms to mitigate, but the psychosexual disorder will never be cured as such. There are far more people living with paedophilic tendencies than those who have offended against children. Many will never act on their tendencies, but once they allow themselves to go there, it makes it far more difficult to control those tendencies in future, which makes paedophilic offenders incredibly difficult to rehabilitate and almost impossible to say that they are definitely not a threat to society. This knowledge makes the sex offenders register an even more important tool in protecting children and other vulnerable people. Clearly, from what we've already covered, there are gaps in the implementation of the register. How big those gaps are, we don't really know. The vast majority of members of the public would probably say they'd like to have access to such a register, but we also know that families are more likely than not to protect sex offenders within their own circle. And there's the kicker. While it's terrifying to think that your child may have a teacher at school who is a sex offender, far more children are sexually assaulted by their family members than people outside their homes. Poverty, unfair shame, and societal pressure often cause these assaults not to be reported, and these offenders carry on offending. And there's no register for pedophilic uncles or aunties, is there? And that last bit is another consideration. How many employers are checking female prospective employees for sex offence histories? Or are they only checking the men? Are we still operating under the delusion that only men are pedophiles or sex offenders? If so, then we aren't using the tool to its full capacity either. I think that it is important for us to understand the mechanisms that have been set up in our country to prevent crime. Because even though we don't have access to them personally, knowing they exist means we can put pressure on those who can use them to do so. The next time you have a conversation with your child's school or extracurricular activity organization, how about having the uncomfortable conversation of whether they screen their teachers and sports coaches for previous sexual offences? And if they say yes, ask them whether that is true only for new employees, or have they done it with their current employees too? And who checks the principal or other person in charge if they are responsible for actioning these checks? And all importantly, are they checking both male and female employees, or only males? And if they scrunch their face up at you and have no idea what you're talking about, perhaps you should think twice about sending your child to that school or activity. If you're interested in joining activism groups to push for the sex offenders register to be made publicly available, there are a plethora of those available on social media too. If the subject is one you're involved in any way, maybe you've worked with the legislation or have experience as an educator with the system or have a success or even failure story around results from the register, please do reach out. I'd love to do a deeper follow-up on this important topic. You can pop me an email on info@killeraudiocreations.com. If you found value in this special topic-focused episode and you'd like to hear more or have a topic you'd like to suggest, please reach out by email or any of these social platforms. If you'd like to hear more victim-focused true crime content, please subscribe to True Crime South Africa on Spotify or the platform you're using to listen right now. If you're looking for something still related to real-life stories, but often with a more positive slant, you can check out my new podcast series, I Live Through This. You can follow both podcasts on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, thank you for your support, and I'll chat to you soon.